Okay, so this, as I mentioned, is going to be our last class for the summer. Today's the last day, just so you can have us in here, and then I'll be heading up to camp in a few weeks. So I think we'll be back in touch, God willing, in August, and we'll resume then. Again, every year I just like to thank the JCC for hosting our class. It's been a few years now, and they're always very accommodating and very happy to have us. Whoever does have connections here or just wants to walk out and say thank you for having us, it's definitely appreciated because you know, we don't pay and they set it up for us. They go out of the way to make it very accommodating. So again, just to thank the JCC for having us all these years here in the building. I want to discuss today the upcoming holiday of Shavuos. Now, Shavuos is this Saturday night. And now, Shavuos is a holiday, you know, it comes in and leaves, it's quick. You know, it's one day in Israel, 2 days here. It's a day which, you know, sometimes, you know, we can just blink, you know, and miss what it's all about. So I want to make sure that we are able to think about it in advance and get ourselves ready for this very special day. Shavuos is the holiday designated to remember the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. The Torah itself is not clear about that. We've discussed that in the past. The Torah itself never tells us the purpose of Shavuos. In the Torah, Shavuos is just called the harvest festival, because this is the harvest season in Israel. The Torah never actually explicitly correlates Shavuos with the giving of the Torah. However, if you do the math, if you open up Parshas Yisro, where the Torah describes Mount Sinai and the giving of the Torah, and you do your math, you can actually figure out that the Torah was given on Shavuos. So it does work out. Why the Torah does not mention that occasion on Shavuos, that could be a different discussion. I think we've had that in the past. I don't want to focus on that today. But it is interesting to note that the Torah itself never actually correlates Shavuos with the giving of the Torah. They're looked at as two separate events in the Torah. However, Shavuos is a very joyous, uplifting day. The Torah is who we are. When you ask, what does it mean to be a Jew? It means you're somebody who is part of a nation that received God's Torah. And that's the most simple definition of a Jew. We're those who have the Torah, are committed to the Torah, cherish the Torah, pass on the Torah. And that's who the Jews have been, you know, ever since that day. That original Shavuos, you know, 3,600 or so years ago, to this very day, Jews have been the people of God's Torah. Any other way to define a Jew is missing the boat. You know, we define a Jew as that nation who is committed to keeping the Torah. And anything great that's ever come out of the Jewish people stems from that fact that we're God's people who received His Torah at Mount Sinai. So I was thinking, you know, this week, now I think that every single holiday, you know, a thinking Jew needs to approach the holiday with a certain thought. We have to figure out what's the proper emotion this holiday should kind of evoke from us. So, you know, different holidays have different emotions. We definitely look at, you know, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur as a time of fear and judgment. We look at, you know, Purim as a time of joy. Passover, a time of freedom. I mean, every holiday has those emotions it's supposed to evoke. Shavuos I found a little bit more complex. I was thinking about Shavuos, and I find there's kind of a conflict in emotions about Shavuos. Not my personal emotions, but what you find in terms of sources, and in terms of the Torah sources and the Talmudic sources, there's very different approaches to Shavuos, and they're conflicting approaches. So I wanted to go through this conflicting approach to Shavuos, and then try to figure out how we're supposed to relate it to our own personal observance of Shavuos. So let's just start with some sources. I'm going to go through a bunch of sources here. And we'll learn from the sources how the rabbis and the sages approach Shavuos. And then from that, we'll try to figure out our approach to Shavuos. So I want to start from something we actually quoted, I think, a few weeks ago, from the Sefer HaChinuch. And Sefer HaChinuch describes the mitzvah of counting the Omer. So counting the Omer is what links Pesach to Shavuos. And that's supposed to be the build-up and anticipation of Shavuos. The counting of the Omer is supposed to be a very exciting and joyous time. Because during the counting of the Omer, we're anticipating God giving us Torah on Mount Sinai. You can picture the original counting of the Omer, when the Jews first left Egypt, so they couldn't wait. You know, God just did tremendous miracles for us, and now He's about to give us His Torah, and that was so exciting for them. And every single year, we're supposed to be thinking that same exact thought process. We should be thinking, I can't wait for Shavuos to come, because that's the day where God gives the Torah to the Jewish people. And I'm so happy and excited to receive the Torah and to mark that event, I can't wait for it to come. So Sefer HaChinuch says, and he uses very, very beautiful terms, he calls Shavuos the day that our hearts are yearning for. He says, similar to a slave who is yearning for some shade from his work, and that's what Shavuos is all about. It's a day of anticipation and excitement. So that would evoke in a person a feeling of joy and love of God. I can't wait to get God's precious gift. And we view the Torah as a gift to the Jewish people. You know, we talk about it as a matana. It's a gift. That's the Hebrew term used. the day of Shavuos, in particular when God gave to Moshe on Mount Sinai the Ten Commandments, that's referred to with an analogy of a bride and a groom, a chasen and kala, a time of joy. There was a marriage, a bond made between the Jews and God. So that's a very joyous occasion. We find in the Talmud that there's a dispute in the Talmud. How is one supposed to? How should you spend your day of Yom Tov? On a Jewish holiday, what do you do? So one opinion says, which is an interesting opinion, says you make a choice. Either you spend the entire day in prayer and Torah study, make it a day that's totally spiritual, or you can choose to make it a totally physical day. Spend the whole day, you know, partying and eating and celebrating. But don't mix the two. That's one opinion in the Talmud. The other opinion is, no, you should have a good balance, half and half. You know, spend half the day devoted to the service of God and prayer and study, half the day devoted to celebrating, and that's how you should observe a holiday. That's the other opinion. But then the Talmud says, everybody agrees, even that person who says that on other holidays you can devote the entire day to spirituality, everybody agrees on Shavuos you have to eat. You can't not party on Shavuos. You have to have some time on Shavuos to party for yourself and to enjoy yourself physically. Everybody agrees to that. So why on Shavuos? I mean, of all days, you think Shavuos should be the most spiritual of all days. The day we got the Torah. It should be a day where we're totally focused on Torah study and we should divorce ourselves from the physical world. But yet, the Talmud says everyone has to make sure they celebrate on Shavuos with food. So why is that? So Rashi explains, because that's the day we got the Torah. How can you not celebrate? You have to show how much the Torah means to you. You have to show how much joy you have, how much simcha there is that we receive the Torah from God, and therefore you got to celebrate. You can't just, you know, if you spend the day in spiritual pursuits, so maybe you're doing it out of a certain duty towards God, a certain reverence of the day. But the Talmud is telling us, no, there has to be also a personal, emotional, and physical joy in Shavuos, which goes beyond, in a sense, other holidays, because everybody agrees you must celebrate and party on Shavuos, at least somewhat. Everyone agrees to that. So that's another source that suggests Shavuos is a day of joy, of love of God, of anticipation, of excitement. There's another source. This is a quote from Rav Yosef, the famous scholar in the Gemara, Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef used to order his servants on Shavuos to make him the finest cut of meat. He would tell, it was called, in the Talmudic times, the best cut of meat was called the igla tilsa. It was a meat of a calf. That it was either the third calf born to its mother, according to some opinions, or it was a three-year-old calf. But it was considered the finest cut of meat in Talmudic times. And on Shavuos, he would tell his servants, make me this finest cut of meat possible. And he's...
Meat,
right. We're used to the custom eating dairy, right. But he would order the meat on Shavuos, and he would say, if not for this day, how many Yosefs would be out there in the streets? I'd just be a common, everyday, average Joe, as it were. You know, Joseph, an average Joe, you know. But he said, because of Shavuos, because we got the Torah, I became a great person, because the Torah is what made me great, and therefore I'm going to celebrate. And the way Rashi explains it in that passage in the Talmud, Rashi says that Rav Yosef is pointing out, because I studied Torah and I became an uplifted, exalted person, an inspired person, that's why I'm celebrating. So again, we find that on Shavuos there was a sense of joy, of celebration, of the love of God. The custom of eating dairy is actually a little bit of later custom. But in the Talmud, you know, it treats like any other holiday that meat was the main source of food on Shavuos is also meat. So that's another source. And these are all descriptions of excitement and joy and love of God. Furthermore, when we talk about God giving the Torah to the Jews, we mention it every single day in our prayers. And both in Shacharis and in Maariv, there's a bracha which we recite, which recounts our joy in receiving the Torah. And those brachas both begin with the love of God. Ava Rabba, God loved us so much and gave us His Torah. Ava Salam, God has everlasting love for us and He gave us His Torah. So it was an emotion of love. God gave His Torah was an emotion of love. Standing at Mount Sinai was a scene of love. It was a wedding. That's how it's viewed. It was a wedding. The Jews were under the chuppah with God and we were bonding together. And that was the vision of Mount Sinai. When the Jews first approached Mount Sinai, so there's a speech given to them. You know, Moshe gives kind of like the introductory speech to Mount Sinai, to the experience. And the way the speech begins, it's a very inspiring and uplifting speech. And Moshe tells them that you saw the miracles God did in Egypt, and God carried you upon eagle's wings and brought you close to Him. And now if you listen to God and you guard His covenant, You'll be for God the segul mikol amim, the treasured nation. You can become for to God a mamlechas kohanim, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that God said to Moshe to speak to the Jews. So God gave them a very uplifting speech. You could become a great nation, God's treasure, a nation of priests, a holy nation, if you just accept the Torah and keep it. That's what God told them. But it was, again, it's an inspiring, uplifting speech of joy, of love. That was the speech.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
And that was given before Moshe went up?
Yeah. That was the very first thing they did when they got to Mount Sinai. He gave a big speech to the whole Jews before he went up to the top of the mountain.
And that didn't entice the people enough to not do the
calf? I mean, that was already 40 days later, so it could be the inspiration already wore off. Yeah. Which happens. As you read the description, the Jews stand around the mountain, and God is there with this big display. Yeah.
I have a question. When you say accept the Torah, keeps it, can you specify? Because we have now various denominations. They say they accept the Torah. They say they keep it. So how do we keep it, and how do we accept it?
Well, we accepted the Torah
entirely without any change, or can we build a Judaism halakha?
Well, there's a difference between building and changing, right? You can build upon the Torah's foundations. You can't change the foundations of the Torah. So what it says in the Torah, meaning the written Torah and the oral tradition, that is set in stone. To build upon it and extend it, that we can do. But to change what it says, that's not the Torah anymore. That's something else. So the accepting of the Torah meant, as God taught to us at Mount Sinai through Moshe, and that's passed down generation to generation since then. As they stood at Mount Sinai, there's also a description that the Jews they were so excited, they wanted to run up the mountain. And God kept warning them, you're not supposed to go up the mountain, only Moshe goes up the mountain. And the Jews, Moshe had to make these like border fences to make sure they didn't run up the mountain. They had to like place guards at the door of them, at the bottom of the mountain, so nobody ran up the mountain. Because they wanted to connect to God. They were so excited to connect with God and God's presence, they just couldn't hold themselves back. So it was a time of tremendous love of God and excitement. That was the first emotion which we see about Shavuos. We see a lot of sources show Shavuos is a day of great joy, of great simcha, and of great love between God and the Jewish people. So that's one set of sources. So one emotion we have to have on Shavuos is the love of God, that God has given us His precious Torah. God's given us the opportunity to connect with Him. And this is the day which has made us into who we are, made us the nation that we are, and we should be so excited and overwhelmed with joy on Shavuos. So let's put that aside for a second. Then you read more sources. And Shavuos is a day which corresponds to the fear of God. The standing at Mount Sinai, what did we see? We saw thunder and lightning. We heard God's booming voice. When we heard God's booming voice, we all trembled. And the rabbis teach us, they even actually fainted. They passed out, as if they died at Mount Sinai, and they had to be revived, because it was so scary and overwhelming to hear God. So there was a certain terror, you know, which God was portraying at Mount Sinai.
That's a midrash that the people died.
It's the Gemara says it. It's based on certain verses in Tehillim, is where it mostly comes from. But you have that. And then it says that at Mount Sinai, the Gemara tells us, this is the famous image, that God took the mountain over our heads. And he said, if you accept the Torah, then great. And if not, then, you know, this you'll be buried under this mountain.
Right.
So God coerced us, forced us into taking the Torah out of fear. He took the mountain and threatened us. If you don't take the Torah, then this mountain's going, whatever it means, to think literally or figuratively. But there was a certain coercion that we were so scared at the time, we couldn't say no. We had to take the Torah. So there was these deep emotions of the fear of God, which also came out in Mount Sinai. Furthermore, the tradition has it that the holidays correspond to different ones of the patriarchs. Pesach corresponds to Abraham, and Shavuos to Yitzchak, and Sukkot to Yaakov. And we also say that every month corresponds to a different one of the tribes, 12 months, 12 tribes, etc. So Shavuos corresponds to Yitzchak. Now each one of these great people stands for a certain midah, a certain attribute. And Yitzchak is famous for the fear of God. He's referred to as Pachad Yitzchak. God is the fear of Yitzchak. That's how he's referred to in the Torah. So fear is considered, you know, the Yitzchak's main service of God came through the fear of God. That was his main midah. So if Shavuos corresponds to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak is the one who serves God from the fear, So then we also find that Shavuos is a day where we're supposed to be having that emotion of the fear of God, the dread, the awe, and the reverence of God. And in a certain sense, these first sources we quoted in terms of the love and the excitement and the sources of the fear and the dread are conflicting emotions. Those who we love, we don't fear usually, and those who we fear, we don't love. That's usually how it goes. But yet, in the service of God, we're actually commanded to have both. We have to have the love of God and the fear of God. And it should really, not only Shavuos, it should be a constant conflict in the emotions of a Jew. And we'll discuss it's not really a conflict, but it seems like a conflict, because I'm supposed to love God very deeply and want to come as close as I possibly can, but I should also be terrified of God and want to stay back. You know, it's hard. So do you go forward or do you come back? Do you go forward or do you come back? There's actually a description that the prophets give of the angels. And it says the angels kind of like, they come forth and they draw back, and they come forth and they draw back. And many commentaries describe, because that's the emotion that you have when you serve God. You want to get close, but if you get too close, you get scared and you come back again. And it's a constant process. It's like when you approach a fire, you want to come close to get the warmth. You get too close, you get burnt, and you jump back from it. So that's how we have to view it. So there is this constant struggle of emotion in the service of God. Is it the love or is it the fear? And again, our obligation is to have both. The question is, how do we deal with it? This balance is actually pointed out in a verse in Psalms, in Tehillim. It says, "Ivdus Hashem b'yira, you should serve God with fear, v'gilu b'yirada, you should rejoice in trembling." So rejoice in trembling is a very interesting phrase. Rejoice in usually when we're trembling, we're not happy. And usually when we're happy, we're not trembling. But the service of God is called rejoicing through trembling. That's what it's referred to as. So I want to try to understand a little bit of, you know, how do these two different ideas play off one another, and why is Shavuos the time really to emphasize both ideas coming together? There's actually another source from last week's Parsha, the Chukosai. The Chukosai begins describing all the blessings the Jews will get if they follow the Torah. And then it goes into all the curses if we don't follow the Torah. But when it describes the blessings in the beginning of the Parsha, so the Torah says, and this is kind of the culmination of the blessings. And the blessings talk about there'll be rain at the right time, and plenty of food, and plenty of grain, and then we have many children, and your enemies won't attack you, etc., and God will be with you. And then it says in verse 12, chapter 26, V'salachti v'sochachem, God says, I will walk amongst you, v'yisi lechem lelokim, I'll be for you a God, v'atem tiyuli la'am, and you will be for me a nation. So the culmination, kind of the climax of these blessings, is that God says, I'll walk amongst you, I'll be your God, you'll be my nation. So what's going to mean that God walks amongst us? I mean, God's not physical. God's not going to walk next to us. What does that mean exactly? So the, what?
To be with you.
To be with us. So you're right, but Rashi explains it even further. Rashi says, God's speaking about, in the future, he says in the Garden of Eden, God says, I'll walk with you in the Garden of Eden, among, you know, like one of the crowd, meaning that we'll feel very close to God, we'll feel a certain comfort with God. There'll be a casual relationship. You know, he says, like one of you. God will be for us a friend, if you want to call it that way. It is interesting also, you do find the term friend used for God. There's the famous story about Hillel, the great sage Hillel. So the convert came to Hillel and said, convert me while I'm standing on one foot. So Hillel said, teach me the entire Torah standing on one foot. That was what he told him. And Hillel stood on one foot, and he said, that which is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. So the usual understanding of that Gemara is that you need to be, that really encompasses all interpersonal relationships, that don't do things to others that you don't want done to yourself. But Rashi explains it in a much deeper way. Rashi says that, who's your friend? Your friend is God. And he cites a verse in Proverbs that compares God to a friend. And he says, what's hateful to you, don't do to your friend, meaning don't do to God that which you don't want done to yourself. You want people to follow your wishes, so you better follow God's wishes. And that way he understands that analogy. But God's referred to as a friend. I mean, there is a certain relationship we have with God which could be very friendly and loving and casual. Now, on the other hand, God is infinite and all-powerful and knows all and sees all and is far beyond us. So Rashi continues. He says, well, you might think that you won't fear God at the time. And we have this description of walking with, you know, we're gonna walk around with God in the Garden of Eden in a very casual and loving way. Rashi then says, well, maybe you won't fear God. No, it says, I'll be for you a God. I mean, you'll still fear God. So there's a closeness, but yet a reverence, which is still going to be there. I mean, even when we reach this stage of the climax of God's blessings, and we're all with God experiencing his great closeness and presence in the world to come, we're still going to recognize the distance and the fear at the same exact time.
Why the idea of great responsibility in the case that that Torah would contain too many commandments? Why the sense of fear of being unable to fulfill all those commandments doesn't seem to joy and so on, but how about can we meet the requirements? Can we fulfill the 600 mitzvot? Can we be able to take on the challenge of obeying all the rules and commandments?
Well, I think that's part of it, because you know, when it says that God, in a sense, had to force us to accept, why didn't we want it? What were we scared of? And the answer seems to be we were scared of just the responsibility which is there. There was a concern that we would retract our commitment because it would just be overwhelming for us. So God said, "There's no, you're not retracting anything here. I'm going to force you into it." So I think that is part of it. That's part of why God had to have this great display of fear at Mount Sinai to show us that you better take this Torah and commit to it 100%. So we find this balance, you know, very often in Judaism. There's extreme closeness and extreme reverence for God. And there's a pendulum swinging back and forth, you know? Love, fear, in a certain sense, a roller coaster of emotions. The Rambam also, Maimonides has a description which I always find also very powerful. Maimonides says that, he says, how does one reach, I think they says the love of God, fear of God, or both, I forgot how he words the question. But he says that you look around the world, and you perceive the greatness of God. You see how beautiful and complex and vast the creation is. And then you say, I see such an incredible designer, such amazing wisdom. I want to just draw myself close to that entity, to that being. And then he says that you step back and you say, oh my gosh, I'm terrified. Because look how great and vast and complex the world is. I'm terrified of God. And he says that both emotions come together because you want to be close to that person who is so great and powerful. You also understand how great and powerful they are, and you jump back from it. So again, it's that same balance. So let's just try to understand a little bit. I think there's many ways to put these two emotions together, but let's just try to understand, you know, a few different perspectives on it. But Shavuos is the time really where it's most pronounced. I think it's an emotion, a conflict of emotions which occurs throughout every single part of Jewish life, and we're supposed to be thinking of these constantly. Two of the constant mitzvos are love of God and fear of God. It's a constant obligation upon us. But I think at Shavuos, when you think about what happened at Mount Sinai, it's the most emphasized, most pronounced over there. And I'll even quote for you, just to top it off, in the Torah itself, after God taught us the Ten Commandments, so the Torah describes to us, you know, why did we have this whole production at Mount Sinai? Why did God do it in this manner? And the way the Torah describes it is exactly with these two different emotions. It says, Moshe told the people, he says, don't be afraid, like you just had to hear the Ten Commandments and you've heard God speak, don't let it be too terrifying for you. And he says, because Bavur Nasos Eschem, Ba'alokim, God came in order to uplift you, and also Bavur Tia Yorosel Panechem, and also so you should have the fear of God on your face. So again, it's both things, the uplifting part of it, which is this love of God we're supposed to be engendered through the giving of the Torah, and the fear of God in our faces, that we should have had an experience of God's greatness to be terrified of God. So the Torah itself really tells us that on Shavuos, this conflict of emotions comes into play. There's Nasoschem, the uplifting part of it, and there's the fear, which comes along with it. I want to understand a little bit more about these two different emotions. On the one hand, the Jews are God's close people. It says in Psalms, Am Karovo, we say in the morning, in davening, we're God's close nation. It says in the Torah, who is that nation that God is so close to, like the Jews, that when we call to him, he answers. And that is how we should feel as Jews. In a certain sense, that's we our primary feeling. You know, that we feel so privileged that we have this special connection to God. And that should be, I think, the primary feeling in Jewish life. However, you find we make a bracha. So the famous opening of every single bracha we make, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. So it's pointed out that if you look at the translation of those words, we change the person in terms of how we're speaking. Baruch Atah Hashem is second person. Blessed are you, God. Second person. You know, we're on speaking, you know, intimate terms. And then we say, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, the God and the King of the world. And he's speaking in third person now. You're more distant. And every single bracha we say is like that. We first we say, God, you know, you, blessed are you. And then we say, He is God, the King of the world. So we're trying to, you know, again, take that balance, you know, somehow bring them both together. So the how do we do that? And how are we supposed to do that? So there's many ways to look at it. But I've looked at something to bring it out in one way over here. We discussed earlier the image of the mountain over our heads, you know, coercing us into taking the Torah. So a time of terror. You know, God said, here's Mount Sinai, it's held up over the people. If you accept the Torah, then great. And if not, then down comes the mountain, and there you'll be buried. Again, commentaries describe what exactly that analogy is. It doesn't seem to be literal. Could be, but it doesn't seem to be literal. It seems to be an analogy. And the way I like to understand it is that we understood the truth of God. So at that point, you just can't say no. I mean, we didn't have a choice in the matter. We were coerced, not because God threatened us with a gun, but because when you're standing there and you're perceiving God's greatness, there's no other option. Well, what are you supposed to do?
I question that in a way. Sometimes if people are faced with the truth, but you're putting too many demands on them, you know, you're going to have to keep all these mitzvot. There might be some people who would not want the responsibility for.
I know I'll talk about that later. But I'm saying that there's truth and there's truth. I mean that there is intellectual truth, and then there's looking God in the face. You know, when the Jews were looking God in the face in Mount Sinai, it was clear that no was not an answer. That was very clear. But on the other hand,
was Mount Sinai the highest mountain?
It was the lowest mountain.
It was the lowest?
It was a low mountain, yeah.
So why God chose the lowest mountain?
A symbol of humility. It was to teach us that only those who are humble are those who are going to succeed as Jews, to have humility. But we see this image of God took the mountain over our heads and wanted to force us to take the Torah. And that's a very famous description. Probably maybe heard that before. That's something which is quoted very often. And it seems like, you know, we were standing in Mount Sinai and we were stuck. What are we supposed to do? To the extent that the Talmud says that after the fact, we had an out. We could say, God, we were forced. We didn't commit to this.
Right.
You know, it's not a valid commitment. If you forced me into it, I didn't have a choice. So Talmud says later on we accepted it out of our own free will. But you did have this instance of the mountain over our heads, this coercion into accepting the Torah. Now there's another quote which people don't know as well, which you have to put together with this, and then it'll help us answer our question here. The other quote is found in the very last portion of the Torah, Vazos HaBracha, and it says in Vazos HaBracha, there's a phrase, it says, Veheim tuku l'raglecha. Which is actually a very hard term to translate. It says that the Jews, they kind of inserted themselves at your feet. The Jews inserted themselves at your feet. So Rashi says, what does it mean the Jews inserted themselves at your feet? Rashi says that they're worthy of God's great blessings because they inserted themselves under the bottom of the mountain, at your feet at Mount Sinai. So we're picturing God takes the mountain over the people and says, take the Torah, I'm smashing you. But then Rashi says over here that the Jews ran under the mountain. They wanted to be there. You know, God said, here's the mountain, I'm coming to put it. The Jews says, no, we're coming under the mountain. We want to be under the mountain. We want you to force us into it. And they wanted it. So it's an interesting description. We have to put the two together. We have the one description of the mountain over our heads, and the second description of the Jews racing to get under the mountain. We wanted to be there. And I think the answer is very simple. You know, the Jews felt such a surge of love and closeness to God at Mount Sinai. It was such a beautiful, uplifting time, and they wanted to preserve it. Now, the problem is, if the entire experience of Jewish history was only based on the love of God, we've mentioned before, it's cited in the Talmud, and it's obvious, if you're only working with love, if one day you just don't feel it, so then you take a day off. Now, if we only served God because we loved God, so let's say today I don't love God today. Today I'm a little bit upset, a little frustrated, I'm not in the mood today, I'm a little sick. So then, okay, so you forget about today. Today I don't need to serve God. I'll do it again tomorrow when I have the love again. What fear does is fear keeps it a constant. Because I know, okay, even though today I'm not in the mood, But I'm terrified of God's response if I don't do the right things. And therefore, even though today I don't feel a sense of love, and I don't feel a sense of attraction to God, or a sense of closeness to God, I'm still going to do what's right, because I'm scared. Right? That's how these things work. A volunteer. So a person who volunteers, so when they feel like they can do it, they do it. If they're not in the mood, so they don't step forth to volunteer. If you're being paid, you got to do your job, because you're going to lose your salary otherwise. You get fired, because there's a certain fear in that. So the Jews said, we feel right now incredibly close to God. We feel such a surge of love and connection, inspiration. We feel the ahava, the love. But we want to make sure that this lasts, because we understand how important it is to be committed to God. We understand how important it is to serve God. We understand the truth of Torah right now. But we know somewhere down the road, the feelings of love may wear off. And then maybe we're going to drop the entire thing. So we want to feel God. We want to feel the fear as well. We want to feel that trepidation. So God said, I'll give you opportunity. And here's the mountain. And they run to the mountain and they let God terrify them. Right? Yeah.
There's a reality here that many people don't fear God. And then those of us that do fear God look at them and say, well, they're okay. I mean, they've got a big car. They have a big house. They have a lot of money. They're very successful. So it's even more difficult to fear God when you see those that don't fear God doing, at least, you know, on the surface,
right,
they're doing fine.
Yeah, so, you're right.
It's very difficult to have this concept of fear, which is related to what you feel, but also what you see.
Right. That's true. It's a very valid point. That's the classic question of, you know, why good things happen to bad people, which is the question even Moshe struggled with, the Talmud tells us. I mean, we have to see it, Sakhar Alo, Rosh Hashanah, you know, both those, why bad happens to good people and good happens to bad people. That's one of the classic questions, you know, even in the Talmud itself. And it's something that we try to view things from the larger perspective, meaning beyond the confines of this world. We understand that there's this world, but God has a much larger picture he's working within. He's working within eternity. It's hard to see it. You know, when we're sitting here in this world and we find the wicked people, you know, succeeding, and we're like, well, why is it that way? But part of our faith is to see that there's a much larger framework, you know, of reward and punishment we're working within. But we're always trying to develop the fear of God. Not because God wants us to be terrified, but because fear is what keeps us in line. So at Mount Sinai, you know, God first gave us these feelings of love, this excitement. You know, we counted the Omer, we could not wait to make it to Mount Sinai to get the Torah. It was so exciting for us. And Moshe gave us this inspiring speech when we got there. You're going to be the greatest of all nations, God's treasured people. You'll be a nation of priests, a holy nation. And we felt so uplifted. And on Shavuos, we celebrate the fact that God gave us his Torah and it made us into such a great people and improved our lives and made us so spiritual and close to the Creator. And we're so excited. But then we said, well, how are we going to maintain those feelings? And the answer is, we have to develop a sense of fear. So at Mount Sinai, God did us a favor. And God said, you want a sense of fear? Well, I'm going to display myself in a way which will scare you. You know, it'll make you shake in your boots. And then you realize that's also part of what it means to serve God, and that'll keep you in line every step of the way. So God spoke to them in a way which made them tremble and made them, you know, faint. And God had, there was thunder and there was lightning and there was these loud sounds, you know, and the experience was a terrifying experience.
And they ran away, right?
And they ran away, yes, as they backed up and they ran away and they were shaking and they were so terrified of it. And the reason was because God isn't here to threaten us. God is not a terrorist. What God is trying to do is God's trying to give us that opportunity that the service of God will remain with us forever. And that's how we're supposed to approach Torah. Our main feeling should be that I want to serve God because I love God. I love his Torah. He gives us so much. He's so amazing. He's the God is infinite and God is great. But those feelings alone don't keep us at all times, because those feelings alone can wear off at times. You know, we lose sense of it. We don't feel so good, and then it can fall apart. So we as Jews, we have an obligation to develop a sense of fear of God. And that fear of God is what keeps us in line during those challenging times. But the rabbis stress again and again and again, the ideal service of God comes through love. And that's the ideal.
Last week's parsha was very parallel to this. Just again, the
blessings and the curses.
Right. The love, like if I do these, I'll have all these good things, but if I don't, oh my gosh.
You better watch out. Right.
That's kind of like an echo of last week's parsha.
Right. Yeah, good. Yeah.
I have the feeling that we see here something very special, very, very different.
forced people to be on Sinai. It means those who came there, who were, there were about 20% of the Jews that left Egypt, and some of the Egyptians that joined them,
right.
They came there because they wanted to.
Right, that's a nice, very nice point, right.
And the other religiouses were fighting and forcing people, the Crusades and the Muslims, they are fighting up till today.
Right, interesting. Yeah, that's a very good point.
So I think that the fact that they were not forced gave it a much stronger aspect, a much stronger point of becoming and receiving the Torah, and it will be on a much higher level because they didn't do it because somebody forced them. They
right.
were not afraid. You know, the fear of God is no more covet, is more appreciation,
right, that's a nice word.
But it is not, oh, I'll be killed if
right.
I don't do
right.
that. Or in Spain, they were mutilated and killed. And it's very, very,
right.
very, very unique.
It's something from the start that Judaism never did, never promoted. Even God at Mount Sinai, there was no...
Right.
If you were only there because you chose to be there. Nobody...
What did you say before? That we were all forced to accept
that's because, but what she's pointing out is that no one was forced to show up. Anyone who showed up to Mount Sinai wanted to be at Mount Sinai. Nobody
that's
had
true.
To show up to Mount Sinai.
But
once we were there, so
yeah,
then...
Then God threatens us.
Right, once
you either accept it or I'm going to drop the mountain.
You're right. But that's the...
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying, that we ran for that experience. That's what I'm trying to point out. We wanted that experience. We wanted...
But there's an element of coercion in accepting.
Correct. That's correct. But only because we wanted to experience that.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to say.
That's
another good example. Nasev and Ishma was that we want to accept it. We're so excited to accept it. We don't care what's going to happen. We want to serve God because we're excited to do it. So we ran to the experience of fear. We ran to that experience.
And we're so fragile. It's such a fragile concept that it doesn't take long before this entire assembly of people that have seen it right with their own eyes,
the golden calf.
Thousands
yeah.
of years later, when I didn't see anything.
Right.
I'm probably more legitimately fearful than maybe they were, because they saw everything, and then it wasn't long before they said.
Right. I mean, it's hard to judge them on their level, but you know, it's hard to judge them on their level. But that's a valid point. Deserves its own discussion, its own class.
Okay.
You know. That's for sure.
No, but that's what happened.
That's what happened, yeah. That you know, the golden calf, how it is the follow-up to this experience, that's something which deserves its own separate discussion. You know, that's a long discussion, too, you know. So we're trying to get this love and this closeness to God to remain with us on a permanent basis, and that's where this one idea of the emotion of fear coming in. I just want to point out, just to finish up, the holiday is called Shavuot. And that word, you know, commentaries discuss, like, why do we call the holiday Shavuos? Shavuos literally means weeks, the holiday of weeks. And, you know,
7 weeks.
7 weeks. So it's a build-up of the 7 weeks.
Shiva.
Shiva. Well, Shavua. Shavua is a week, right? That's where Shiva, from seven, that's where it comes from. So why is the holiday called the holiday of weeks? A very strange name of a holiday. We should call it, you know, Chag HaTorah, Chag HaSinai. I don't know, there's a lot of ways to call it, but why Chag HaShavuos? So there's really two different explanations of what the holiday is, and I think it fits our idea over here. So Shavua means a week, and one idea is the holiday of weeks, because Shavuos is all about the build-up. You're supposed to count 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos, and the experience of Shavuos is the culmination and the result of the anticipation, the build-up of the 7 weeks, meaning all the excitement that one should have, all the anticipation that we had during the times of Sfiros HaOmer, from Pesach until Shavuos, that will result in Shavuos. And that's an idea of excitement and joy, because we were counting down 7 weeks, we can't wait to get there, and we finally get there. All my 7 weeks are built up to this climactic point over here. And that's the idea of Shavuos. Others point out, the term Shavua could also mean an oath. To swear is also called a Shavua. Shavua would mean the holiday of swearing, holiday of oaths. And those commentaries describe that there's a concept that we swore to God at Mount Sinai to keep the Torah. There was a commitment that was made. On the level of an oath. Really like an oath. You know, the Talmud regards it as a full-fledged oath. We made to God at Mount Sinai, we'll keep the Torah forever. So the idea of an oath is this concept of commitment. That, you know, we're going to keep it no matter what. not out of love, but because of obligation and duty. That's the other aspect of Shavuos. There's the buildup of the 7 weeks, which is the buildup of the excitement and anticipation. And then there's the commitment that was made, which is the obligation and duty to continue on with what God gave us at Mount Sinai. The Talmud Yerushalmi, Jerusalem Talmud, has a very interesting comment. The Jerusalem Talmud points out that if you read the description of the sacrifices given on Shavuos, the word sin is never mentioned. And every other holiday, you do bring a sin offering. There's a communal sin offering brought, which is supposed to atone for us for our sins. On Shavuos, there's also a sin offering as well. But the Torah doesn't describe it as a sin offering. It doesn't say the word chatas. It just says, you know, bring some goats. And we know it means a sin offering, but the Torah just doesn't use that word. It doesn't call it a sin offering. So the Jerusalem Talmud points out that there's a lesson in that. And the lesson is that one who approaches Shavuos properly and commits themselves to accepting the Torah, like the Jews did at Mount Sinai, is cleansed of all their sins. That's what the Talmud says. And that's why, so the Torah doesn't mention sin about Shavuos, because it's a day where we can be cleansed of our sins.
Oh, then that's why, then after we say the broken for the counting of Omer, it says, hopefully this will keep blemish and continue, we will be rid of
and it'll cleanse us of our sins, right, yeah. So that's it, that's part of the build-up. That's a good connection. But what's this idea? Why would it be that way? So I would compare it to the concept of a ger, a convert. The rabbis teach that somebody who converts to Judaism is like a newborn child. They're as innocent and clean as a newborn, because they've come from being someone who's not committed to Torah to someone committed to Torah. And in Shavuos, every single Jew became a convert. None of us were Jews at the time. None of us were committed to Torah. And at Mount Sinai, we all committed ourselves. So every year there's an opportunity to recommit ourselves. And when we recommit ourselves, then God will regard it as if we've accepted the Torah for that very first time at Mount Sinai and cleanse us of all of our sins. It takes a very deep sense of commitment, and you know we have to rise to the occasion. But if we're able on Shavuos to make that commitment, and it's a commitment that we accept what God gives us, you know, through thick and thin, and you know, for good times and bad times, and when we're in the mood and not in the mood, this concept of fear. So at that point, we become cleansed of our sins on Shavuos. So this is this conflict of emotions, but I think it really all comes together in that aspect. So Shavuos should be a day of tremendous joy, but yet we have to also recognize the reverence and awe we have of God on Shavuos. You know, when God gave us Mount Sinai, that display of fear is something that should stick with us. Yeah.
What's the holiday, Chag HaKatzif?
That's Sukkot. Chag HaKatzir is Shavuot. Asif is Sukkot. Yes, Chag Asif. No, Shavuot is Chag Tatzir. Chag Tatzir. It's the harvest festival.